Welcome back to the American Revolution Podcast, episode 33, The Aftermath of Quebec. So when last we left off, Montgomery's attack on Quebec had failed. Montgomery himself is killed. Arnold is wounded and has to be carried from the field. And Dan Morgan is captured, but not before sticking a giant middle finger up to the British by choosing to surrender to a priest rather than the British officer. So on the first day of 1776, Benedict Arnold is laid up in the General Hospital, where he is still awaiting news of his division and Montgomery's men and what the outcome of the attack was. You see, after Arnold is shot in the leg, he has to be taken to the General Hospital, where Dr. Center is awaiting to do the emergency surgery to pull out the shards of lead. While he's laid up in bed, Arnold sends word to Wooster in Montreal asking for as much help as possible because he just knew that Carleton was going to send a force to mop up the rest of the Continentals. And when it is blatantly obvious that Carleton is sending men out against the American lines, Dr. Center tried to evacuate Arnold. But of course, in his never-say-die attitude, he says, just bring me my pistols and my sword. He's planning to go down swinging. He also orders any man capable of holding a musket, it doesn't matter what condition they were in, any man that was able to hold a musket was ordered to defense. Carleton's men were ordered to move out to St. Roch, where they would silence the battery that was still shelling the city from the mortars. They quickly overtake the St. Roch battery, they silence the mortar teams, and then they're moving to the General Continental Lines. As they near the General Hospital in the center of the Continental Lines, Arnold's men spring into action. Now, it's not a pitch battle, but it was obvious to Carleton's men that they weren't going to push the Americans out so easily, so they returned back to the city. Now, this wasn't a pitch battle, but it was definitely a small victory in a day of disastrous defeats. The next day, Major Return Meigs will arrive at the hospital under flag of truce. Now, remember, he was captured with Dan Morgan and those men at the very end of the battle. He'll report to Arnold of the situation, report how many men they have captured in the city, and then he'll go gather up those men's belongings and then return to captivity. We do have to remember that the 18th century is still a more chivalrous time as we are used to today. These men were gentlemen. Whether they were rebellious upstarts or the simple redcoats of the British Army, at least early on in the war, they were still afforded all the rights of gentlemen. So Carleton, not wanting the men to suffer in captivity, had sent Meigs over to collect their belongings so that they would have a bit of an accommodation, because they were going to be, well, in jail for the most part. After Carleton's little counterattack, Arnold became a man on edge, almost, and it's actually a stark contrast to what we'll see at other times in the war. You know, early on, you can see that he's more of a, you know, fire and brimstone type. He's, you know, Old Testament. Definitely a man that was a force to be reckoned with. And it's weird that this is like his low point in the war. A lot of people think it's his, you know, traitor's turn. And yes, it's the low point from our standards. But when we get there, we're going to talk about, you know, the thought process behind Arnold's turn to the dark side. Here in his own letters to Wooster, they lack their normal zeal. He was repeatedly asking for help. Now, when the Americans were at full strength, Carleton had no interest in moving out against the American lines. It would have been a much more interesting fight. But now, they're significantly weakened with those that are wounded and the fact that they lost one of their best field commanders in Montgomery. They had another 200 or so captured, plus how many more are wounded and sick. So the American lines are not looking great, that's for sure. Well, what Arnold doesn't know is Carleton was not planning on attacking. So it became a waiting game. Actually, the only fighting that really happens in this interim period was the fight for firewood. Arnold started burning the Lower Town and St. Roch so that it deprived the city of any ability to get some sort of fuel to burn fires. I mean, they burned some, but they were also taking some of their own because, well, heck, they're out on the Plains of Abraham, little shelter. They were probably very cold themselves. It won't be until the second week of January till Schuyler heard of the death of Montgomery. Now, he is definitely saddened. He was very much impressed by this man's ability as a commander, and he was a good friend to him. He will actually report to Washington, and it'll almost be like a lament of, you know, the death of Montgomery. He's reporting of the situation, of course, but Washington really has no ability to help because he's dealing with his own problems. The same issue of enlistments running out that was plaguing Montgomery and Schuyler, well, it was plaguing Washington's army around Boston. A good thing was that word of Arnold's march to Quebec had reached Congress. Now, in Philadelphia, it had taken several weeks for even the march to get to them, so it's going to be a couple more weeks before they hear of the outcome of the attack and what happens to Montgomery. But from what they hear of Arnold's ability so far, he has earned himself a well-deserved promotion to Brigadier General. But it would be a month before Arnold would even learn of the promotion. And he had already turned over command of the Continental Forces at the Plains of Abraham to Colonel James Clinton while he's laid up with his leg injury. Now, some things are happening back in Britain that I haven't really touched on. You see, there's a new Secretary of State for the colonies. What Lord North had early on is now turned over to George Germain. And for those who know at least the deeper side of early American Revolution history, or at least the colonial history, I should say, George Germain was a British officer that actually got edged out by Parliament because he just wasn't a very good army officer. And now he's the leader of the armies in the colonies. So go figure. Now, command of the British forces is still in control of the commander-in-chief, and that is William Howe. So Germain's position is more administrative. So Germain devises a plan that he believes will end the war quickly. The plan is for the British army to split the colonies in two. You see, the main American army is around Boston, with the commander-in-chief, George Washington, leading them. Their main administrative body, the Continental Congress, is in Philadelphia. So if you can divide Washington from the Congress in Philadelphia, well, then you might have an ability to end the war faster because the army is away from its administrative body with no way to protect it. So the plan was to try and capture as many of the forts and waterways between New York and New England as possible. You see, the other purpose is that New England is also a main recruiting area for the Continental Army. Outside of Virginia, New England is posting up the most men. So if you can divide their main source of recruitment, then you also are limiting their ability to bring a sizable army to the field. So to do this, they needed to have an invasion force, and the invasion force would not be able to arrive in Canada at least until April because of the way the Hudson Bay freezes and the access to the rivers to get to Quebec and Montreal are also frozen. So there's no way, at least until April, that they're going to be bringing any ships into Canada at all. Along with this, they would need to capture the waterways, and you would need low draft vessels to do so. So maybe you can bring some small frigates in, but sloops and schooners are not big water vessels. Yeah, they control about bays and maybe skirt along the coast, but they're not crossing an ocean. So you're going to probably either get those from one of the islands off Canada where you have a British base, or you're going to build those on spot. And especially for places like the St. Lawrence and Lake Champlain, it's actually easier to build the boats on those waters than try and get them in, because there's definitely going to be some portage happening where you're going to actually have to move the boat kind of on land down to a more accessible part of that waterway. So it becomes just a crazy mess. What Germain doesn't really account for is that Schuyler, who, folks, is still in command of the Northern Department. Let's not forget, he may be in Albany, but he's still the commander of the Northern Department and overall commander of the forces in Canada. Schuyler has an advantage. Remember, the Continentals had, well, we'll just say liberated four ships, and it's going to be a making of a small fleet. So on the Champlain, they had the Liberty, which they captured at Skenesborough, the Enterprise, which Arnold had captured when he went towards Fort St. John, and then the Royal Savage and the Revenge, which were captured when Montgomery finally took St. John. This is no armada by any sense, but it's enough to hold the lake for now. Schuyler was also building tons of bateaux. Now, the original plan for these bateaux was just simply troop movement. These flat-bottom boats had next to no draft and could easily move troops through northern waters, the northern waterways of the New York and Canadian colonies. Now, Congress had another idea. Well, why don't we use these ships to our advantage and put them on the defense? Now, Congress, through their heart of hearts, is offering to send shipwrights from places like Philadelphia, Boston, and even New York City. Schuyler turns to them and says, no, no, no. He says, I'm going to hire shipwrights from up here. These are northern vessels. These shipwrights know what they're doing. And they'll be able to crank out more bateaux faster. At least one shipwright will be able to crank out a bateau faster than two of your southern shipwrights, because they don't use them. They're strictly a northern boat. It's not common on the deep waters of places like Delaware, Virginia, or even downstate New York to use bateaux, because they have waterways where a deeper draft is fine. Up north, the waters are shallower, so you need that shallow draft. So he hires his own shipwrights. And by mid-February, they were pumping out bateaux like crazy. They were averaging an impressive 3 bateaux a day. Now, the only problem was is that they had an endless supply of lumber, but they didn't have enough time to properly treat it, so most of the lumber that they're building is greenwood. So the greenwood is waterlogged, retains water, hard to work with. It's just a problem. So these are not the most reliable of bateaux that are built, but they built so many of them that who needs reliability when you have so many extras? Now, back up north, the siege had devolved into a dull routine, and the battle itself was more of a waiting game now. It's very clear that Canada is going to side with whoever can break the stalemate. The only problem is, neither side has the ability to break the stalemate. For the British, you're not going to see a relief column come in until April, so they're pretty much stuck until April. So Arnold is requesting from Wooster to get reinforcements sent as much as possible. Problem is, Wooster doesn't have the men to spare, and those that he does have to spare, he can't really get them all the way up to Quebec, even if they're just in Montreal, because it's too difficult with the heavy snow. And to go up the waterways is next to impossible with most of the rivers being frozen. Schuyler is trying to move reinforcements up north, but the problem is a lot of those waterways are difficult to cross. Now, if it was just ice and they were frozen over, they're pretty easy to pass. But the problem is the snow's so deep that they can't cross the waterways because they don't know if it's ice or it's thin ice and it's going to crack and it's going to fall right through. So for safety purposes, it's next to impossible to send men that way. So it becomes a giant waiting game. Now, on February 17th, there was a glimmering hope that they might have someone that can hopefully break the stalemate. You see, Wooster was overall commander because he was the next highest ranking general that was available when Montgomery died. Benedict Arnold had just been promoted to brigadier general, so he didn't have the seniority to outrank Wooster. And I believe Wooster was a major general at this point. So Wooster is the administrative leader. He's in Montreal trying to direct stuff in that area, while Arnold has kind of fallen back into his role as field commander. But Congress, once again, through their heart of hearts, has found a way to bring hope to the Continental Army. You see, they order Major General Charles Lee to the north. Major General Charles Lee was wildly popular. A former British officer, he's probably one of the best field commanders that the Continental Army had available to them. He had an impressive service record. He knew how to command troops in battle. And a lot of people thought the next best option behind George Washington as commander-in-chief of Continental Forces. Now, I have personal feelings about Charles Lee that we will get to later, but for now we're going to call him the glimmering hope for the North. And it couldn't come sooner for Schuyler. Him and Wooster were just not getting along. Wooster was a strict manager, I guess we'll go with. I mean, this man canceled Christmas. Yes, that's what I said. Canceled Christmas. Now, in his defense, I will say that in the 18th century, Protestants had no interest in the holiday of Christmas, and it's not until the 19th century that they kind of jump on board the whole Santa bandwagon. So we'll just say that he is a product of the time. But the orders to the Continentals was, do not upset the Canadians in any way at all. Pretty sure canceling Christmas for a Catholic is a very easy way to upset them. Just throwing that out there. So, Lee is coming north. But, as in the Old Testament, Congress giveth and Congress taketh away. They get word that there's a possible third front opening. They hear that the British are planning an assault on their largest southern port, which is Charleston, South Carolina. Instead of Lee, Schuyler will get Major General John Thomas. A pretty new Major General, he has earned himself a reputation with Washington's army in and around Boston. Schuyler doesn't know much about the man, but he's really having a lot of trouble with Wooster, so anything, I guess, is any change is good change at this point. Now, Congress does one other thing, and we're going to leave off today with just kind of like the opening to next week. Congress has decided that along with sending a new major general to be an administrative person and possibly take over command of the field troops in and around Quebec, they also send a commission up to Montreal to try and negotiate a deal with the Canadians. Maybe they can find a diplomatic route to get them to side with the Americans rather than having to totally beat the British and expel them from Canada. So maybe this will work. The commission is a group of two senators and a private citizen. They're going to head up that way, and they're going to get into negotiations with the Canadian representatives that are in Montreal. And that's where we're going to leave it for this week. Next week, we're going to pick up with this Canadian commission and talk about what they go through and the diplomatic routes that the Continental Congress will use to try and reach out to the Canadians. For a man that was planning on a shorter episode for this week, I actually talked for a bit longer than I wanted, which is always good. More is always better, but hopefully not too long. So everyone have a good weekend. Just as a friendly reminder, I'm starting to post book recommendations directly to the Facebook rather than doing them here. It just makes it easier. And for those who might be questioning the legality of it, yes, that will work as a bibliography. So till next week, I hope everyone has a good weekend. I know the East Coast is going to be hit with some snow, so everyone, good luck with that. Me, being in the Mid-South, is probably not going to be much more than a nice, gentle dusting. Until then, always remember, keep that powder dry.